Joining us to talk about what that actually means is Barry Eichengreen. He's an economic historian. He's a professor of economics and political science at UC Berkeley, just out with a new book called The Populist Temptation, Economic Grievance and Political Reaction in the Modern Era. Thank you for coming in.
Good to be here.
Can we start with basics? The tariffs that got rolled out on Friday. If I'm Joe Consumer in the United States, what will I actually notice? What impact will it have on me?
You won't notice very much yet, but basically what the new tariffs do is impose a tax of 25% on $34 billion of imports into the United States. So this is round four after the earlier steel and aluminum tariffs, after the solar panel tariffs before that, and after the washing machine tariffs before that. So the washing machines are a good example. The price of a washing machine at your local big box store has gone up by about 15% since the earlier tariffs were imposed.
And what's the Trump administration's argument for imposing them?
Not clear. The Trump administration is asserting that foreign countries are not treating us fairly. But what that means exactly is quite unclear. They sometimes make national security arguments, as if the United States sourcing steel from Canada somehow impairs our national security. They sometimes argue that the fact that we sell fewer exports to China than they sell to us is unfair and impoverishes the United States, maybe because we have fewer manufacturing jobs as a result. And sometimes they look to the overall trade balance of the United States with the rest of the world and make the same argument.
The argument about the trade balance with China, this is not an unfamiliar one to our listeners. We've had plenty of people on decrying currency manipulation by China, saying it gives Chinese products an unfair advantage against American products and undermines good union blue-collar jobs here in the United States. If not tariffs, what leverage does the United States have for addressing those kinds of issues?
First, I think the currency manipulation argument is out of date at this point. It's a couple of years since China has gone down that road. It's pretty clear that our trade deficit is grown at home, that we run a deficit with the rest of the world because we save too little in the United States. And we have greatly compounded that problem by adopting a major tax cut in December, where the government is now dissaving big time as well. So I don't think it's a matter of leverage. It's a matter of getting our own house in order. And we're clearly moving in the opposite direction under this administration.
The specific thing cited by the Trump administration with these tariffs was technology transfer practices in China, making American firms hand over their technologies as the cost of doing business in China.
Right. And I think there, the Trump administration is rightly pointing to a very real problem, that U.S. companies that go into China generally have to find a local partner and share their technology in ways that are not entirely consistent with global rules. So how do you solve that problem? I think you build a coalition of countries that all go to the organization that adjudicates disputes over those global rules, the World Trade Organization, and say to China, you will suffer consequences, including trade sanctions, from all of us if you don't modify your treatment of foreign companies and their proprietary technologies. But of course, we're doing exactly the opposite. We're proceeding unilaterally. We are proceeding in a way that antagonizes our potential allies in this dispute. And we're utilizing strategies that don't put very much pressure on China, where they can just respond tit for tat and they're in a relatively strong position to do so.
Why are they in a relatively strong position to do so? The shorthand political calculus out of the Trump administration has been, we buy more stuff from them than they buy from us. So if we go into a tit-for-tat trade war, they're going to be hurt worse.
It's not only how much you buy from the other side. China has a variety of other ways in which they can retaliate. If they run out of U.S. exports to tax, they can tax U.S. companies that are doing business in China. They can respond in a variety of other ways that make us uncomfortable. So I think the idea that the trade war will be limited to trade is misleading and potentially dangerous. It's a trade dispute for no good purpose. Maybe that's a little strong. Maybe there is that proprietary technology issue, but to little good purpose. And there's a real danger of it spiraling out of control.
I'm speaking to Barry Eichengreen. He's an economic historian at UC Berkeley. His latest book, The Populist Temptation, Economic Grievance and Political Reaction in the Modern Era. You just said the trade war that appears to be growing would serve no good purpose. You don't take the Trump administration's argument that this is the best way to respond to what you acknowledged is bad technology transfer practice in China at its face value. If that's not why they're doing it, if you think it serves no good purpose, then why is the Trump administration doing? What do you think is the animating motive?
I think President Trump is aware that trade war is a phrase that garners headlines, and he likes headlines. Number two, it's important to remember that these sanctions on Chinese exports are popular among Trump's base. So two-thirds of Republicans support the idea, according to polls that were done back in the spring. 60% of white voters with high school educations or less support sanctions on Chinese exports across party lines. So Trump campaigned on a protectionist platform. He promised to get tough with, quote, foreign countries that are treating us unfairly. And that's what he's doing now.
So you think it's pure politics? This is not economic policy. This is putting the next election first and foremost.
If it's economic policy, it's very bad.
Why?
Economic policy. Because your trade balance is not a measure of your economic strength, because taxing goods that go into manufacturing production in the United States, like aluminum and steel, is ultimately going to cost more good manufacturing jobs than it will produce. There will be a bit of additional employment if these measures stand in the steel industry, in the aluminum industry, but fewer jobs in other sectors that use steel and aluminum. So there's something on the order of 150,000 steel worker jobs in the United States, and on the order of 2 million jobs in downstream industries that utilize steel as an input.
So if the cost of importing steel or aluminum or parts goes higher than the cost of manufacturing cars or aircraft or finished goods here in the United States also goes higher, they become less competitive abroad.
Right. So an example would be the automobile manufacturers and the United Auto Workers, who understand that steel is an input into motor vehicle production, and that the cost of production and the demand for the product and the level of employment in the sector will suffer.
That makes it very curious, the actual tariffs he's chosen to impose, because it's not uncommon for a country to manage its economic development by selectively protecting domestic industries it hopes to help development. But usually you bring in raw materials as cheaply as possible, and you try to protect your manufacturers, your value-added industries, your car makers, your airport makers, your tech companies, and so forth, so they can develop to the point where they're competitive without the protections. This is almost the inverse.
It is the inverse. I think the Chinese understand your point, and they are trying to move up the technological ladder with what they call China 2025. And there's a sense in which Trump's policies are encouraging us to reallocate resources and effort toward old line manufacturing, which is probably not the future of employment in the United States. So even if these measures are good for old line manufacturing, they're going to create good jobs for American robots, not so much good jobs for American workers. I think if there is an explanation, it is that President Trump has an antiquated view of how the economy works and what constitutes economic strength. He thinks in terms of old line manufacturing, motor vehicles. He talks about them all the time, talked about them in the campaign all the time. Motorcycles and steel mills, that's probably not the future of the U.S. economy or the future of employment in the United States.
But they do still employ a lot of people in the United States, including people who might be inclined to vote for Donald Trump. So let me bring together all the elements that you've laid out here. You think the tariffs thus far will have a minimal economic impact. You think they've mostly been done for political show. You think if they escalate into a tit-for-tat trade war, in which significantly more tariffs come down from both the United States and China, they will have a significant impact, at which point you think they'll hurt those manufacturing jobs. Which leads me to the question, if all of those things are true, it suggests Donald Trump won't go much further. He's made his point. He's got his headlines. He doesn't actually want to hit his voters in the pocketbook.
I'm not sure that the president and his advisors understand all the linkages that you laid out. I'm not sure that the administration has an exit strategy. So we're going down a road where the United States imposes $34 billion tariffs on $34 billion of Chinese exports, and they respond proportionately. Trump threatens another round of tariffs on an additional $16 billion of Chinese exports. They respond proportionately. And then Trump begins to talk, as he has, about taxing another $300 billion of Chinese exports. How does it end without that kind of escalation? I'm not sure how Trump can declare victory and get out.
All right. Barry Eichengreen, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Barry Eichengreen is an economic historian. He's a professor of economics and political science at UC Berkeley, just out with a new book called The Populist Temptation, Economic Grievance and Political Reaction in the Modern Era. The modern era, by the way, for him is the past 200 years. We may have to ask you back to talk about that history because it looks fascinating.